From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deck. And most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Now, honestly, it's great to see you guys. I have no idea what time it really is. I'm looking at a clock here now that says it's right around 4 p.m. or a little bit before Eastern time. But who knows? Maybe it's arbitrary.
It's 8:49 p.m. GMT.
Okay, there we go. There we go. And body clock-wise, it's, I think, 14 hours ahead for me, but I'm a little out of it, but I think we're going to have fun with today's topic.
What's it like in the future, Ben?
It's interesting. It's interesting. No flying cars yet. Velcro is making a comeback in a big way.
In
so
shoes
stay tuned
or
for that.
Are they finally getting more uses out of it?
Everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Everywhere. Everywhere. I'm a little weirded out by all the buttons around us right now. But but yes, the show must go on, right? Today's episode has nothing to do with the Oscars. There's not a good segue. Today's episode has nothing to do with that, but could be fertile soil for a different episode in the future. Today we're talking about something strange that's happening every single moment of every single day here in the U.S. and abroad. It's military research, and this is a very spooky, boogeyman-esque sort of phenomenon for a lot of us. You know, some folks like Matt, you and I grew up on X-Files, right? Noel, I know you watch it. I don't know how into it you were.
I was into it.
Yeah.
Medium. I watched it typically with no lights on while listening to the Bare Naked Ladies song 1 week.
So the three of us then were very much into X-Files, right? And X-Files paints this picture of a vast interlocking conspiracy between corporations and governments, right? To advance suppressed technology to better the elite's control of the world as we know it. The thing is, that's sort of true. It's sort of true. You don't need aliens for that to be true. It's no secret that the world's militaries have loads and loads of classified weapons, hardware, strategies, including psyops, techniques, and all this other stuff. But where do they come from? In the United States, one of the answers to this question is inevitably something called Skunk Works. It's a cool name, right?
Yeah, potentially pretty smelly.
Yes, yes, there's something stinky about it. But what exactly is Skunk Works? To answer this, we have to start with the story of something called Lockheed Martin. So here are the facts.
What is Lockheed Martin? You've surely heard of it before. There are buildings here around Atlanta with the names plastered across the top of them. This title or this term, let's say, Skunk Works, can really be applied in a lot of different ways to a lot of different things, but normally to secretive, some kind of experimental facility like a lab or a factory, something like that. But the origin of the phrase Skunk Works really does come from this single company, Lockheed Martin Corporation. And to really learn about it, you have to go all the way back to 1943. And there you find the United States Army's Air Tactical Service Command, or ATSC, or ATSC. Because, you see, the ATSC had a bit of an issue. They were worried about German rocket science, specifically jets, as well as, you know, the things that would become missiles and the potential technology that existed there. Because, as we've learned in previous episodes, German technology or scientists there in Germany really were the ones that created rocketry.
Right. Yeah. Nazis are the reason the U.S. got to the moon.
Werner von Braun. right? Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
I think I left the N out of the Vaughn, but you got what I was getting at.
So the officials there from the ATSC, they met with the Lockheed Aircraft Corporation, and they said, okay, guys, let's figure out what we can do on this end to catch up with this technology and make some of our own revolutionary rocketry happen here.
Yeah, and they also said, let's do it quickly.
Yesterday.
Right, let's do it yesterday. About a month after this meeting in 1943, there was a team led by an engineer named Clarence L. Johnson, plain old Kelly to his friends. They came back to ATSC and they said, okay, we're going to build a jet for you, the XP-80 Shooting Star jet fighter. Uncle Sam gave it the green light. Lockheed began developing the first U.S. fighter jet in June of 1943. This is, we should note, the official narrative. You're going to have some other reporters and historians who will argue that the true story begins a little bit earlier in the late 30s. But this is like, if you ask someone at Lockheed what happened, what Skunk Works, this is the official answer. And that jet fighter, the XP-80 Shooting Star, is the birth of what today is known as Skunk Works.
And Lockheed is surprisingly transparent about the origins of this organization. It emphasizes that it was a pretty informal and urgent need that created this collaboration. The formal contract for the XP-80 did not arrive at Lockheed until October 16th of 1943, which was 4 months after work had already begun. And this would prove to be kind of a common theme within the Skunk Works story. Many times a customer would come to Skunk Works with a request, and on a handshake, the project would begin. That's crazy to me, given the amount of money some of these projects must have cost. No contracts in place, no official submission process at all, right?
Yeah, just some make it happens and some handshakes. Johnson and his team eventually, they didn't just design the XP-80, they built one in less than 150 days and only 143 days. Their deadline was 150. This was only possible, by the way, because he broke the rules. He broke all of the rules that were in place. Johnson, you see, felt that the primary problem with Lockheed and government contracts was all the red tape, all the bureaucracy. He wanted to shoot from the hip. He said, we don't need these plans and all these reviews. So he didn't just ignore the status quo. He built his own set of rules, 14 commandments, the first of which is the manager of Skunk Works must have complete control over everything in his program and should not have to answer to anyone higher than a president in a company. So he wanted complete control. He wanted a fiefdom, essentially, that was answerable to very few people. And he also, in direct contrast to a lot of the normal standard operating procedures, Kelly wanted a minimum number of people involved, and he was brutal about it.
Yes, and this is number three. The number of people having any connection with a project must be restricted in an almost vicious manner. Use a small number of good people, 10% to 25% compared to the so-called normal systems.
And he also said, less reports.
Yes.
We want to – look, we'll show our work, but we don't want to have to check in with you. This guy – I get the feeling this guy hated meetings.
Yeah, and also less inspections. Mm-hmm. Like, or at least use subcontractors and vendors and other things for some of the testing stuff and inspection. He's like, don't duplicate so much inspection. We can't do this in that amount of time.
And don't let people outside Skunk Works get in. It's kind of Fight Club-ish, you know?
It is.
The first rule of Skunk Works. Anyhow, we have to note, though, that when this started out, it was just a cool idea, and it was just a desperate measure to get something in the air that could fight the Axis forces. They didn't actually call it Skunk Works for a while. So we have to ask ourselves, how did it get its name?
How indeed? Well, oddly enough, it's kind of a sweet story, at least the way Lockheed PR tells it, because the war effort was in full swing. There was no space available at Lockheed's facility for Johnson's effort. Johnson's organization operated out of a rented circus tent next to a manufacturing plant that made Plastics formerly, and that produced a very strong odor, which permeated this tent. So members of Johnson's team were cautioned that design and production of the XP-80 had to be carried out in strict secrecy. No one was to discuss the project outside the small organization, and team members were even warned to be careful how they answered their phones. Right? So a team engineer by the name of Irv Culver was a big fan of Al Capp's newspaper comic strip, Lil Abner, in which there was a running joke about a mysterious and malodorous place deep in the forest called the Skonk Works, S-K-O-N-K. There was a strong beverage being brewed from skunks, old shoes, and other odd ingredients.
Yeah. So one day, this guy, Irv, he gets a phone call, and he answers it in kind of a glib manner, and he goes, "Skunk Works, inside man Culver speaking," and people loved it. It was a great inside joke because, you know, when you work in an office with the same people, you love an inside joke. So other employees started adopting this, and they started calling their division of Lockheed Skunk Works, and eventually that changed to Skunk Works. So it's not it may be surprising to find that they weren't secretly working on some kind of weaponized odor. This was just actually a neat little office job joke.
Well, yeah, well, it's not even an office job. It's a circus tent. It's a rented circus tent outside a plastics facility, and the whole place reeks. And they're in there, like, doing really important technological work and engineering work. It's so weird to me.
It's so weirdly punk rock.
Yeah.
And kind of like DIY. When you think of government work, you think of everything being all buttoned up in these, like, airtight labs with, like, clean rooms and all that stuff. And this was not that.
Yeah, exactly. It's strange, too, because Skunk Works is often brought up as an example of old school conspiratorial corporate warmongering. You know, it's part of the war machine, the stuff Eisenhower warned us about, and rightly so. But if you learn about Skunk Works today, it's actually a registered trademark of Lockheed. That's a far cry from any off-the-books operation. Their official name is not Skunk Works. That's just the name everybody likes. Their official name is Lockheed Martin's Advanced Development Programs, or ADP. But again, why the hell would you call it that when you have a fun name like Skunk Works just begging for you to say it and shout it to the rooftops?
I don't know. Advanced Development Program also sounds pretty dope.
Like Advanced Idea Mechanics?
Yeah.
The Marvel fans out there?
Yes.
And the elite squad of scientists operating at Skunk Works were known affectionately as the Smelly Boys.
Mm-hmm. And now let's look at Skunk Works today. So Skunk Works still conducts a ton of classified research. We actually do not know how much we don't know what it's doing, really. We know a little bit. And it's a well-known organization in the world. It's not even an open secret, you know. They, in fact, have published a glossy brochure with a 10-point agenda. This was back from 2015, that was focused on kind of selling it to the public and then selling it to the government, or at least the people who signed the checks for contracts. And all it was kind of boring, and it's very full of trade jargon. It's like, we're focusing on keeping costs down. We work closely with the government. We also build these prototypes and we give the savings to you, Uncle Sam. And today, the primary site is out there in Palmdale, California. It's the middle of the nowhere. Why would you drive there, desert, about 60 miles from LA?
Yeah, and that's almost directly north across the mountain range there to get there near Lancaster. Really, I don't know, it's isolated, but it really is close to Los Angeles.
Yeah, 60 miles is not that far. It's just up the way from the Antelope Valley Mall.
And in LA traffic, it probably only took you about 3 days to get there.
Unless you had an experimental Skunk Works helicopter or hypersonic vehicle. This place is huge. There are 100 buildings. There's an estimated 3 million square feet of floor space, and the vast majority of the stuff here is off limits. But there are occasional press tours, and journalists get a peek behind the curtain. So this is all on the up and up, right? This is no longer a secret. lab, something that we think of in association with DARPA. This is actually a government contractor who's trying to work on its public image. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to look no further than something like Boeing to know how important public image can be. There's no question Skunk Works has played a huge role in military innovation, especially in the field of spy aircraft, material tech, things like that. But the question for today is, what else are they cooking up in there, and what's coming out in the future?
And we're going to get to that. At least what we've been able to find, after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. All right, so we have to open this conversation with an age-old dilemma, the problem with secrecy, which is, you know what, sometimes I think we should just make this a children's book and make it a pop-up and put it out in every school in America. This is a huge problem, and people don't think about it as often as they should.
Well, Ben, in that children's book, I mean, it really just boils down to one age-old adage, which is secret secrets are no fun. Secret secrets hurt someone.
Where's that from?
You know, children.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also secret secrets protect the nation from security threats
that doesn't rhyme.
that we've determined to be threats to society.
Come on, man.
And aliens.
Well, there's no judgment in brainstorming. We're spitballing here. You know, I think we're going in the right direction. It's true, though. It's a huge problem. If you're a government, you have to have secrecy because you want to keep your rivals from stealing your technology or getting a jump on your research. That's a huge deal now. Like, the primary intelligence operations of the Chinese government are almost entirely corporate and military espionage. And if you don't have operational security, you could find yourself in a situation where facilities are bombed and people genuinely die. That old saying, loose lips sink ships, is meant to be taken literally.
Got the right idea, Ben, there. I like that one. That rhymes.
I didn't write it.
I can wrap my head around that one.
But here's the other side of the problem. If you are a government, especially if you're the kind of government that allows citizens to vote, which has been, you know, enjoying a brief moment in the sun, we'll see how long
democracy.
Yeah, we'll see how long the fad goes. Yeah. But right now, it's about as successful as, say, Beanie Babies in the 90s.
Hacky sacks, perhaps.
Yeah. If you're one of those governments, you also need at least the illusion of transparency. You need at the very minimum, you need performative transparency, meaning that people want to know where their tax dollars are going. Totally, they want to say in what their government does. Totally. You have to at least make them feel like that is an option, even when, and especially when it's not, especially when you consider that old Eisenhower quote.
Every gunship that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed.
And it's true, right? If voters don't know what is being built, they cannot reasonably determine whether that money was well spent, right? Especially when you consider every dollar that goes to a battle is a dollar that goes away from the people of a country. Eisenhower is right about this. We can argue that this trade-off is worthwhile if we know what's happening, we as voters. This leads us to an important, heartbreaking problem. There are no shortages of countries that spend tremendous amounts of cash, blood, and treasure on their militaries while their people literally starve. We're not being hyperbolic. While they die of starvation, dysentery, things like that. But, you know, the rockets keep firing. We need gas. We need bullets. We need more radar capability. And so in the absence of transparency, speculation thrives. It's like, I always think of that creepy Tom Waits thing. I don't even know if it's a song. Maybe it's more a performance piece. What's he building in there? You guys know that one?
I'm unfamiliar with this.
Yeah, I don't know that one either, Ben.
It's uber creepy. It's like peak Tom Waits creeping around going, what's he building in there? And it's a good question, right? Because we are giving our – if we're voters, we are giving a portion of our income to a thing in a tremendous trust fall. We're asking this Leviathan, this gigantic mechanism, to make our lives better or to, at the very least, maintain a standard of living to which we're accustomed. And now we're throwing money in a black box. So what is Lockheed building in there, and is it worth the expense? That's the question, and it's tough to answer because we know some stuff about Skunk Works, but how much do we actually know?
Well, we know some from the past. We know some from the present and all of it from the future because we've been consulting with an oracle. No, I'm just kidding. We don't know anything about the future. But let's talk about the past stuff that we can talk about. And hey, let's make a determination. Was this worth it? While some of us starved. That's really what we're saying here. So let's think about it. Here's the first one. Lockheed Y-O-3. Noel, what is that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Matt. The Y-O-3A, as it were, was designed to a U.S. Army spec from the 1960s, 1968 to be precise, which called for an observation aircraft, a spy plane, right, that would be acoustically undetectable from the ground when flying at an altitude of 1,200 feet at night. 9 of the 11 Y-O-3As produced operated in South Vietnam at night from 1970 to 1971, only 14 months, and never took a single round. Absolutely were never shot down, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are fascinating aircraft, Ben. I was wondering if you've ever talked about these on Car Stuff or any of the other shows?
Mm-mm. No. This is, I think, the first time any of us have mentioned this on air. Yeah, this is a pretty neat one. It's an out-the-box thing. And, you know, whenever we talk about research in these sorts of fields, we're looking at a huge attrition rate. A ton of stuff never makes it off the blueprint stage, you mm-hmm. know. And a ton of the stuff that makes it to a prototype never gets beyond where the Horton HO-22 was.
Yes, exactly.
Like that, right?
But this was, just to stay on here just for a second, it was a smaller aircraft. You can find pictures of the YO-3 online. And if you look at the pilot, it's like the pilot looks pretty big in the photos because the plane is relatively small. It's got a tiny little propeller up front, single propeller wings that are not large in width. And just to fly around at night, being quiet, observing troops, it did its purpose, and like Noel said, it didn't get shot down. So, you know, it was certainly helpful for the military, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was helpful for the military. You could also argue that it saved the lives of U.S. forces.
There you go.
Through its surveillance capabilities. One craft that might be more familiar to some of us would be the Lockheed U-2. In 1955, Skunk Works got this contract from the CIA to build a spy plane known as the U-2. Later, you know, this one was so popular that a certain Irish band named themselves after it.
The letter U and the numeral 2.
Yes. And they were right on the edge with that one. And the idea for the U-2 was to fly over the USSR and try to photograph sites that they couldn't see using other methods. They operated for a number of years. The first flight happened on Independence Day on July 4th, 1956. But the U-2 stopped flying when a guy named Francis Gary Powers was shot down over Russia. So the U-2 was not as successful as the Yo-3A. I should call it the Y-O-3A, but I like Yo.
Though it did operate for a much longer time.
It did. It did operate for a much, much longer time. And then we also know about the Lockheed A-12, which was a logical successor to the U-2. Because when Skunk Works was – a lot of people don't know this. When Skunk Works was building the U-2, they baked into their predictions that this would have a short shelf life. They said, look, this is going to work really well for a second, and then it's going to blow up in our faces, like the Spice Girls or the Macarena song, you know?
Why would they build a plane that was designed to blow up in their faces? That doesn't seem very effective.
So, okay, let's just talk about this really quickly. So the U-2 plane, the Lockheed version of U2, was a really cool spy plane. It was huge, like really, really large. And generally, the ones that I've seen, at least in museums and a couple other places, were painted this like gunmetal black or like a dark gray, you know, that color. They were to operate in the sky, to be, you know, almost undetectable and just flying over those places, right? But it looks kind of like a jet. That you, if you think about a jet, the way a jet plane looks, it kind of looks like that. The one that we're talking about now, the A-12, this thing looks out of this world.
Really?
Yes.
Big?
Just, it looks like a fully different kind of aircraft.
Got it.
If you look at a picture of it.
I see what you're saying. So, like, the designs were really next level stuff. Sort of like those crazy, the designs started to get a little more angular and crazy, like with those stealth bombers that Donald Trump really thinks are invisible.
Well, yeah, because they had a specific thing they were trying to do with this plane, right?
Yeah, they wanted it to be invisible, essentially. And it is the antecedent of the much more famous SR-71 Blackbird. The interesting thing about A-12 is that it was already in the works when the U-2 was rolling out, because they predicted that, correctly as it turns out, that USSR detection technology would catch up with the evasive capability of the U-2. And then the A-12 was strange because it required some help from the CIA. Now, you might be saying, guys, the CIA, they're not exactly experts in engineering, nor are they experts in aviation. That's correct. But the problem, here's where they came in. So Skunk Works had to build 5 of these A-12 aircraft. They wanted it to go Mach 3 plus, and they wanted to build it out of titanium. It was very tough because in the Cold War, the USSR controlled the titanium game. They had like 90%+ of the titanium trade. So these folks went to the CIA and they said, hey, we know one thing you're good at, setting up front companies. And the CIA said, yeah, we're all about that.
Oh, we know. We heard about that in a very recent episode, didn't we, about the NGOs.
Exactly. So the CIA set up a dummy corporation entirely to acquire titanium for the A-12. That was very stuff they don't want you to know. And it worked. How pissed off would you be if you were the USSR, where it turned out, you know, when you found out that, like, the Socialist Titanium Consortium of Eastern Turkey was actually the agency, and you sold them the stuff they needed to build the spy planes that were flying over you right now.
Right.
Whoa.
Right. Dirty deeds done quite expensively.
Yes.
There you go.
Well said. You know, let's pause for a second for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll dive into some more examples. And we're back. Now, we mentioned this earlier. This is one of the more famous U.S. spy planes, also built by Skunk Works, the Lockheed SR-71 Blackbird. And I don't want to get in too deep with the Marvel fans, but I think didn't the X-Men have a Blackbird at some point?
You mean their plane?
Yeah.
It looks kind of like that,
I think. You're talking about the one that would take off from the ground, you know, and then it would zoom off? It was called the X something. It was definitely called X-Jet. The X. Yeah, probably.
There you go. I think it looks like a Blackbird. Well, that's the thing. The one we talked about before the break there, the A-12 and the SR-71 look very, very similar. Just slightly different shape of the nose, basically, is what you look at when you're looking at it. It looks very, very similar.
No, it's the X-Men Blackbird X-Jet.
What?
Mm-hmm.
It was straight up a Blackbird?
Yep, the Blackbird, also nicknamed X-Jet, is a fictional aircraft appearing in American comic books published by Marvel Comics. Nailed it, Ben.
What does it look like?
It's the one you know from the movies. It's real narrow, tapers off. Like, it's got the wings are in the back, and then the body is real skinny and kind of goes forward. At least that's how they depicted it in the films.
And I think you're right, Noel, that it does have that vertical takeoff and landing capability, which the real Blackbirds can't do.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, the wings are very different, and they are X's.
But
it's a Blackbird. It looks like a Blackbird.
But the real Blackbird's cool, too. It's not comic book level cool, but it is cool.
Dude, when I was in middle school, this was the coolest thing that had ever existed.
Were you one of those guys who had a poster of it?
Yeah.
Did you build a model?
I did, and I went and checked it out at the museum that they have there in Warner Robins.
Cool.
And I wanted to pilot one of these things. It was my biggest dream.
That's true. I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, but Matt, you grew up relatively close to an actual Skunk Works facility.
I did.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll move on then.
Yep. So, but no, I think a lot of maybe you listening out there like saw a picture of this thing. It just looked so futuristic and unreal. And when you started to learn about the physics of it, how it actually expanded a little bit when it got up to the speeds that it could reach because of the heat that was going on with the metals that were involved, it just felt like it was out of this world. Like, and it was alien technology or something that we had captured. Combine that with the whole X-Files enthusiast thing. I mean, come on.
It also seems like it was really difficult to fly.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, that's a problem with a lot of spy planes is that they're terrible on the ground. They're terrible to take off. They're terrible to land because they're just designed to float at a high altitude. So you have to get up there first. It's kind of like, you know, birds that there are so many birds that are terrible on land but amazing in the air. Like the great frigate bird, it looks like a nincompoop when it's trying to walk around because it's not made for the ground. It's made for the sky.
Ben, you missed a really great voicemail we had on the listener mail episode where someone proposed a conspiracy theory that ducks are in fact not floating on the surface of the water, but they have weird gangly legs that extend all the way down to the bottom of the lake or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And that really triggered me, the thought of that, the image of that. And just a minute when you were saying, you know, some birds are terrible. I was really hoping you would just stop short and just say
just,
birds
just
are
terrible.
Terrible. Yeah.
I'm going to give this to you. It's an evil gift, and I'm sure you're already aware of duck penises.
Mm-hmm. They're corkscrewy, right?
There are many.
Did you bring
shapes.
Me one from
Japan? No.
Oh, never mind. I don't want to scoop you.
No. I did not. Duck penises are Lovecraftian is probably the best way to describe it.
Don't they like hook in and won't let go?
They're evil because ducks reproduce non-consensually. That is the most diplomatic way to say it.
So the that's our 71
duck
Blackbird.
Duck penises aside. Spy planes.
I have to talk about this a little more because
yes,
I think
please,
it's so cool. So the previous model, the A-12, you can only have one pilot in there. It's just you by your lonesome flying around up pretty dang high and going ridiculously fast. So you're maneuvering away from people being able to shoot you down, at least hopefully.
Sure.
This SR-71, you can have a pilot, co-pilot in there, helpful in case one operator loses consciousness because you are traveling so fast. And the other thing is that this thing operated for longer than anything that Lockheed was producing before then when it comes to these advanced programs.
Right.
It went from 1966 – this thing, this futuristic thing, went from 1966 until 1998. That's when it was in service.
Like they didn't even like massively update it or they would have had to give it a new model name, right?
It was just awesome and it stayed awesome.
And it was expensive, so it's okay to do – you know, they're still researching the next step or the evolution, but they have to be very sure that it's worth sinking billions of dollars into a new design.
Into the R&D alone, not to mention the manufacturing, right? Quick question for my own edification here. What do these things actually do? Like, I mean, I know they're spy planes and they're surveilling, but like – is it with radar? Is it taking aerial photography? Is there listening devices? I just wonder like what the implementation of this absurdly expensive technology is and how does it benefit us?
Well, I mean, it looks cool and it's just nice to kind of have a flex.
Okay.
It's what's called a long-range strategic reconnaissance craft. Essentially, they have a bunch of eyes in the sky. They have infrared imagery. They have radar, airborne radar, electronic intelligence gathering systems. They have counter missile systems, right? So they can avoid both ground-launched missiles and other birds in the air. And they have these huge cameras. To your point, Matt, about why there was only one person in the predecessor, in the A-12, and while there were two in the Blackbird, for that second person to be able to fit in the Blackbird, the designers had to remove the principal sensor, which was on the A-12, which was this huge, large focal length optical camera. So they were flying over and taking pictures, more or less.
Yeah.
And they weren't, they weren't dropping bombs on civilians or freedom fighters.
Got it.
So another thing that's interesting here is this spy plane, these spy planes specifically, saw the rise of government-mandated drug use because it's the only way that pilots could remain alert while they were on these missions.
Whoa.
This has been confirmed. It used to be considered a secret, but even up into the Gulf War, pilots were taking amphetamines. There's one, a brand name, Dexedrine, which is the brand name for dextroamphetamine. This was given to pilots to keep them alert during flights longer than 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Like Benny's was another one, right? Like Poppin' Benny's, mm-hmm. the housewife pill of mm-hmm. the 1920s and 30s, I guess. And then didn't the Nazis take some form of this as well? Or that was more of an amphetamine? They're amphetamines, that's all.
Right,
that's all
that is.
Yeah.
Blitzkrieg operatives took them. Hitler loved them. Amphetamines were, very common in war because they work.
Yeah, and now we give them to our children to help them pay better attention.
That's Adderall, right?
Mm-hmm. Which essentially, studies have shown they act very similar to amphetamines.
Yay.
So we know that the technology Lockheed was capable of creating was years and years ahead of what the public would be aware of. And we also know that the innovation, the pace of innovation there was much more precipitous than the public might have thought. We also know that Skunk Works projects were not confined to the air. Please don't think that all Skunk Works does is work on aircraft. It's just that we know the most about the aircraft. They also made things that worked on the water.
Yeah. Talking about the Sea Shadow here as one example. Again, like Lockheed's got this look now at this point once we enter the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
It's now 1984. They're using that gunmetal black coated looking mm-hmm. crazy mm-hmm. awesome mm-hmm. stuff.
Cybertruck didn't come from nowhere.
That's exactly right. Now they developed in 1984. It started working being deployed in 1985, a stealth boat, essentially, or transport vehicle, and it looks crazy.
A.K.A. the duck penis.
Mm.
No? That was – no?
They changed the name to the Sea Shadow when they rolled it out.
Yeah. That was just the working title when they were keeping it under wraps and Skunk Work and the family,
Yeah, and it's either called the 9-529 or IX-529. This thing, it looks crazy. If you can just Google Sea Shadow, maybe Lockheed. That's probably the best way to find it.
It doesn't look seaworthy.
No, it doesn't. And it's hard to understand what you're actually seeing. It's like, oh, wait, is that a submarine? But wait, those sides are just diagonal. How far down do they go? Wait, what is this raised part? Are people inside that thing?
It looks like Darth Vader's helmet or something, like the top of a Darth Vader helmet. Or like that weird dude in the first Star Wars movie who had just kind of the dome thing on his head,
Oh, sure,
It looks kind of like that. And there's people standing on top of it in this image that I'm looking at, and there's an antenna of some sort. But yeah, it's got like a weird little windshield, like four kind of little trapezoidal interlocking windshields. And then there's open space underneath. Underneath it, which is the part that really throws you off. It's like it's above the water, but there's this like – it's almost like a moving tunnel kind of. It's
it looks
weird.
Like an chronoplon. You guys remember those?
I don't.
Chronoplon. What is that?
Chronoplon is somewhere between a ship and an aircraft. It uses the ground force effect to hover over the water. They're so cool. E-K-R-A-N-O plan.
Oh, would that be what I would maybe have always heard of as just a hovercraft?
They're different from a hovercraft.
They're different.
They don't have
okay.
the thing.
They don't have the inflatable parts.
They don't have
parts.
The like bladder mm-hmm. at the bottom.
Right, right,
yeah.
right. Interesting.
They look like this. Ah, oh, they're so cool.
So they use propulsion to literally hover above the surface of the water
yeah.
with like fans or something like
yeah.
that? That's interesting.
I always wanted to ride one, but a lot of them are either decommissioned or in countries that are difficult to get to.
Interesting. Well, what's going on with the Sea Shadow? Because I'm with you guys. I'm like, how is this thing functioning?
It was an experimental ocean surveillance vessel. It was built way back in 1984,
yeah.
which is crazy. The idea is that it's reducing its footprint, its radar profile. So that's part of why it's floating like that with this hydrofoil on board. So it has two separate hulls, and they're connected by struts. So the hulls that you see are underwater. So there is more to it than just a flat plane.
Mm-hmm.
And the ship was used in secret experimentally until 1993. So for almost a decade, this thing existed off the grid and was not universally acknowledged. People were saying, hey, I saw some weird stuff out there in the ocean. And people were saying, whoa, Donnie, slow down on your whatever their version of Adderall was at the time. And this was also one of the first tests of automation to reduce the number of actual people
Ooh,
on the vessel.
Interesting.
And now this one has an ignominious end because in 2006, the U.S. Navy gave up on the Sea Shadow and they literally tried to sell it at an auction and nobody would buy it. And so then they said, okay, we're just going to sell it for dismantling. You can dismantle it. You can take away the parts. We get rid of the secret stuff. And they said, look, if you buy this, there are two conditions. One, you cannot sell it. Two, you have to scrap it. And they sold it in 2012 when it was dismantled, but it lives on because there are ships like the Impeccable and the Victorious that still have the same kind of structure. I'm going to just show you guys. This is an actual ship. It's working now.
Whoa.
They took that Neat. Weird missing piece of the hull or that
yeah.
center cut out, and they kept the twin hull design, but they made it much bigger.
Man, that's fascinating.
And there's a lot of money there. So these are things that have all happened in the past. We know currently that Lockheed's doing a couple of pretty fascinating things. One of them makes sense, and one of them is an out-of-nowhere thing that I guarantee will sound like sci-fi to 95% of us listening. The first is the Lockheed Martin SR-72.
Oh.
Makes sense, right?
Wait, can
yeah.
we do one thing before we hit the 72?
Totally.
Because it's something that Noel brought up that I have another picture of in my mind that I'm assuming other people do too.
Yeah.
And it's the F-117 Nighthawk, which is, I think that's what it's called. What is it called? It's Lockheed. It is Skunk Works. It is Skunk Works, and it's the Nighthawk. It's the stealth fighter jet-looking thing that looks kind of like a hawk or an owl mm-hmm, or a bird mm-hmm, of prey mm-hmm, or something,
mm-hmm.
Similar to all the other designs we've been talking about.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the one that I remember seeing when I think it was Desert Storm was occurring mm-hmm. in the 90s. The thing was built in the 80s, around the same time that they were building the what were we just talking about? The Sea Shadow. The Sea Shadow. And it wasn't publicly acknowledged until 5 years later, and then it didn't actually make an appearance anywhere operationally until Desert Storm. But it's just another one of those iconic planes that was used for a lot of different things in secret for a long time, and then eventually it was made public.
So what was like a big unveiling when they decided to make these public? Is it only when they decommissioned them? Like when is the moment that the public gets to know about these cool, you know, sci-fi looking spy planes?
Well, here's the way I think it goes down. It appears in an operational capacity somewhere in another country probably where there is, a conflict occurring.
Sure.
Then one of these things gets used. And either it gets shot down, one of them gets shot down, or one is caught, operating, and then the United States military has to kind of just
they got
say,
a cop
yeah,
to it.
Okay,
yep.
that was
yep.
us.
Yeah, kind of like the stealth helicopters.
With the Bin Laden raid?
Right. Yeah, the Nighthawk was publicly revealed, or I would even say publicly acknowledged in 1988.
Okay, yeah.
And people still didn't really clock it until, as you said, Matt, in the Gulf War in 1991. It's weird to call it a stealth fighter because it has stealth fighter capabilities, but it's mainly a ground attack aircraft.
Yes, yes.
Dropping bombs, like hot mixtapes. So that, yes. So that's amazing. That's one of the posters I had.
Yes.
You know, because it's just so iconic.
I apologize that I jumped back to that, Ben.
We have to.
So let's go. I'm going to take you back now to the big brother of the Lockheed Martin SR-71, the SR-72.
Oh, yeah. This one is still in the works. Still in the skunk works. According to Lockheed, it's going to replace the 71. It's going to have a middleman role between surveillance satellites, manned aircraft, and unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, those creepy blimps that are so far up in the sky you can't see them. I think I'm supposed to call them airships now. So the idea here is that the SR-72 is going to be able to leverage all this communicative ability and its high speed to get in and out of protected airspace and sneak pictures, sneak surveillance, or blow up a target before people can detect it at all, much less intercept it. This is dangerous stuff. And it's, you know, if you're going to be alive for the next few years, you're going to see it in action or you're going to hear about it. The last thing, this blew me away. I don't know what you guys think about this. Paul and I were talking about this earlier. The last thing that Lockheed Martin has confirmed that they are working on is a compact fusion reactor. Yeah, right. Fusion, the thing that we can't really do efficiently. They're jumping the gun from a fusion reactor, those can exist in a very inefficient way, to a compact fusion reactor. So have you ever been walking around with your backpack and you're like, man, this laptop's okay and I like my notebook, but I sure wish I had a fusion reactor. Well, it's not that compact, but it's on the way.
We just talked about this with Chris Cogswell as like the pie in the sky thing.
And how he said it would never happen.
Yeah.
Oh, and thanks to everybody who wrote in to let us know about that interview. We got some great feedback from that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to listening to it. I had to miss that one.
This is crazy. I'm just reading about this right now for the first time, Ben. What?
Yep.
What?
Skunk Works is officially building a fusion reactor. They're actually, as of 2019, they were on the fifth iteration of it, known as T5. It's a huge engineering challenge because they have some stuff that they have to keep very, very cold and some stuff that they have to keep very, very hot. And they have to put it all together and make it work without tearing itself apart or, you know, exploding and raining death down upon us.
I'm going to go ahead and call BS on this whole thing. I am reading about this online right now in 2020, talking about how this was unveiled in 2015. And Ben, if this was actually a program they were doing that Skunk Works was working on, it would never be revealed until, as we've seen with each other example here, like 5-10 years later. This, I'm just calling it right here, and this is my opinion, but this is Skunk Works and Lockheed like putting up a smoke grenade just to be like, hey, look over here, guys. Put all your money, Russia and China and other large state actors, into this technology that you'll never be able to do. That's what I'm saying.
Wow. Okay. I see what you're saying. That's crazy because the official line from Lockheed is that the U.S. military wants to create something that can be a portable generator.
Of course they do.
Because think of the supply chain for, you know, diesel or gas-powered vehicles, right? That's one of the that's a huge expense in war, if not one of the most egregious expenses. But yeah, a compact fusion reactor. What?
Yeah.
How compact are we talking here, guys?
I mean, it's not a backpack, again, but if you look at some of the articles, you can see
bigger than like a generator you might buy at Home Depot.
Dude, yes. Yeah.
Dude, there's a picture on this. there's a picture, I'm assuming that they're saying is from this thing in the Skunk Works from thedrive.com. And it looks like a big PR photo of a bunch of engineers touching one individual piece of this compact reactor.
Right.
Dude, this is not real, man. That's probably that's probably a vacuum chamber.
You know what it looks like?
It's probably an image of a vacuum chamber that they're just messing with.
It looks like one of those tanks you'd see at a beer brewery. I was off mic when I said that. But really, I mean, it's an industrial piece of industrial equipment. You know, it's not, when they say compact, I mean, it's smaller than like a, you know, a reactor you'd see with one of those cooling towers and the whole nine and all that stuff. Obviously, that's not the actual reactor, but fascinating.
No, that, I mean, I think it is.
No, this is self-contained. I just mean like a nuclear power plant. The reactor is not the cooling, the big thing that you
see.
The
cooling tower.
Yeah, that's a separate thing. People have some people mistakenly believe that that is the reactor.
Yes, it's a good point. So the predecessor of this current one, this T5, was only 1 meter in diameter and 2 meters long, which is big. You know, mm-hmm. Again, it's bigger than a backpack or a bread box. I was just thinking about, you know, I was thinking about a conversation we had a while ago. Matt, I just want to double check. Do your parents actually do use a bread box?
Yes.
So weird.
Do they also keep their eggs out at room temperature?
Never.
Do they churn their own butter?
Never at room temperature.
That's a thing, though, you know?
I know.
Yeah, because of the goop, the gunk that's on the eggs. That's the reason grocery store eggs have to be refrigerated. The gunk is washed off of them.
That's like amniotic fluid?
No, it's like a protective thing that keeps bacteria from coming in and rotting eggs. So you don't have to refrigerate eggs if you buy them from a farmer's market or if you just get them from a chicken, if that's where you're at.
Yeah, the gunk. I got it.
Yeah, it's a technical term. I'm sure it's an acronym.
Well, guys, we're approaching the end of this episode, but we got a few kind of housekeeping issues to take care of. What else? I mean, given its long history, Skunk Works is often a kind of go-to for a lot of fringe researchers who believe the government may be developing or hiding advanced suppressed technology, which they almost certainly are.
Well, they were. They have been their whole career.
That's what I'm saying. They still are. We just don't know. We won't know about it for another 10, 20, however many years.
It's kind of like saying, is Mel Gibson going to say something anti-Semitic? Well, he's got a track record. You know what I mean? Maybe it's new.
Hey, but people can change, Ben.
Sure.
Government agencies can anyway, it behooves them to do this. And honestly, this isn't an inherently like negative thing. It doesn't have to be seen as some kind of nefarious, shrouded kind of activity. Just because we don't know about it doesn't mean it's, you know, bad for us. In fact, us not knowing about it is kind of important. It's sort of part of the deal, right? But gone unchecked, and we can't follow the paper trail of the funding and all that stuff. I mean, you know, there certainly can run amok.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do object to calling this housekeeping, because I would say the most important part of this episode is this: the concern of active secret research and suppressed technology. In Lockheed's case, does not come from just some rabbit hole or some sort of creepy copypasta. Nor does it come from the dilemma of state secrecy. In June of 2008, Skunk Works went on an unprecedented, unexplained hiring binge, and they didn't fire a bunch of people either. They hired a bunch of people to do something. We just don't know what it was. The reason or the reasons behind this hiring spree are still not clear. They increased their size by a third, by 33%. That's a crazy amount of people to hire. And we don't know – again, we don't know what they were doing. We know what they acknowledge they're doing. They're these pretty – I wouldn't say super specific, but they have these categories. There are things like next-gen fighters, quieter supersonic planes. And then they have stuff that's pretty vague, like revolutionary technologies.
Mm.
What is that? It could be anything.
It's technology that promotes revolution is what I would assume.
Right? And that's where we are today. You know, today Skunk Works employs 3,700 people. And these are facilities in Palmdale, California. That's the big one. Also Fort Worth, Texas. Also in Georgia. They're working on at least 500 projects, most likely more. And it's in a range of stuff.
Now, do you think it's public information? No, I don't. I can't imagine it would be as to who these people are that work for them. Are there high-level positions that are public-facing in Skunk Works that we can know about and talk to?
Sure, yeah. There are PR folks. There are admin folks. The engineers are pretty locked down with
got
NDAs.
Yeah.
And we've got some engineers in the audience today. If you're bound by an NDA – don't let us be the reason you break it. We don't want your jail time on our conscience or your fines. But if you can talk about it, we would love to hear your insight on what's going on here.
But like Lockheed itself and especially Skunk Works, it's so government adjacent that it's essentially like an extension of the government in some small way. I mean, it's a private industry, but – there's so much back and forth between the two that I feel like it's almost inseparable. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching there. What do you guys think?
No, yeah. I mean, to me, it's very similar. I mean, it is just a contractor, and that's just the way it is, right? It's money changing hands to get to the experts.
But what if they wanted to do a business with China?
Lockheed?
Yeah.
I
mean, we export things to China all the time. You know, if they're a private industry, why can't they sell these planes to other countries?
Well, just speaking of, China is simultaneously trying to produce a reactor based off of Lockheed Martin's reactor.
Yep. And also we know that the government or the U.S. government has to approve certain sales, and they can do this through a carrot or a stick approach. So they can sanction certain sales, meaning they will disallow them, and then they can incentivize other ones through a number of different ways. It's strange because everybody's trying to learn the same thing. They're trying to apply it in one way or another. The ultimate goal, of course, is to be the hegemon, to have the sovereignty and control of a given technology or domain. And that's why Boeing, even if it goes bankrupt, something like that will rise up in its stead, because the state needs to have manufacturing capabilities like this. And that's why we know that the people at Lockheed and other associated things like Northrop Grumman will be working around the clock for the foreseeable future. The stuff we named is already crazy, but that's just the stuff we know about. So what do you think, folks? Has Skunk Works moved more or less completely into the public eye? Or, like Matt just argued, are there still secret, unacknowledged projects at play? If so, what are they? And what are they going to do? And when will we find out about them? 20 years afterwards?
Yeah.
30?
Probably. I'm telling you, that SR-72 is out there right now. It's been spotted. It's the reason for numerous UFO sightings over the past 10 years, I guarantee it.
And now we spent 80% of this episode just talking about the different spy planes. Who else knows what they're working on there? Like ice cream that doesn't need to be cold to be good, or like Dorito flavored ice cream, or I'm just spitballing here. Oh, I'm not a member of Skunk Works.
Oh, God.
But we want to hear from you. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And again, if you're an engineer in the audience, we would love to hear your take on this, because a lot of the reporting on these sorts of things can be alarmist at times when it doesn't have to be. But you should, if you are lucky enough to live in a country where you can vote, you should pay attention to where your tax dollars are going, and you should have a conversation with yourself and your friends about the dilemma between secrecy and transparency. How much transparency do you deserve, and how much secrecy does your government need? Let us know. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. We're all over the internet. Say hello to our favorite part of the show, your fellow listeners, on our Facebook page. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. But wait, you can also follow us as individuals online.
You can follow me exclusively on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown. I tried to get verified, but they rejected me. But you can still find me there. I promise I'm me.
It's true. It's true. You could find me too. I'm Matt_Frederick_iHeart, I think.
Are you verified? Do they verify you, Matt?
No.
They don't – the whole idea of verification is really trippy to me because it's sort of like I can't prove that I am myself if I don't have that blue check mark next to my name.
Would you have to send them like a birth certificate?
You got to send them a copy of your photo ID.
Oh, we'll do that.
I tried. I got rejected. Oh. I'm not a public figure enough, I guess, for Instagram.
Understood.
And their rigorous standards.
Understood.
You can also find me on Twitter, where I'm at BenBolinHSW. You can find me on Instagram, where I am in a burst of creativity, at BenBolin. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. And if you are the kind of person who says, I love this show, I love you guys, I hate social media, I heard your Facebook episode, and I don't understand how you guys are still on that thing. How else can I contact you? Boy, do we have good news for you.
You can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message. We'll hear it.
It goes, well, you'll hear it first and foremost.
I'll hear it first.
You're the first line of defense. It rings with the stuff that I want you to know beat, the unquantized beat theme quite loudly. Every time you call, right into Matt's sleeping ears, and he wakes up and deals with it post haste.
Yes.
You might get a call back personally from him, in fact.
That's right.
He's been known to do that.
Dan, if you're still listening to this show, I would love to get a message from you. I think that would be hilarious.
That would be great.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
I'd love to play it on the air. That would be fun.
At least it'll make it worth it because we just freaked you out while you're in traffic driving.
Potentially.
Nobody listens this far into the episode. I'm telling you this. Nobody is listening to me.
Yeah, we've seen the statistics.
All right. Well, good night, everyone. Email us. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.